We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Great. Thank you. Thank you.
Members of the Joint Convention, the Governor of the State of Michigan, Rick Snyder.
Those are Republicans, in case you haven't figured this out on the right standing, and the Democrats not so much.
Thank you. Please be seated.
He's eager to get to this thing. He's always like a racehorse at the gate.
Well, thank you for that wonderful reception. Thank you. Thanks. Well, thank you for that warm reception. Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly, Speaker Tom Leonard, Senate Majority Leader Arlen Meekoff, House Minority Leader Sam Singh, Senate Minority Leader Jim Ananick, members of the Supreme Court, members of the Court of Appeals, Attorney General Bill Schuette, Secretary of State Ruth Johnson, our members of Congress here tonight, the Consul General of Canada and the Consul General of Japan, my cabinet, ladies and gentlemen of the legislature, fellow public servants, the citizens of Michigan, and my family, thank you for the opportunity to be with you tonight to talk about the state of the state. Before I begin the body of the state, let me talk about three special items to mention. First, I'd like to recognize First Lieutenant Cody Cass and Staff Sergeant Michael Beatty. They actually took military leave to march across the Upper Peninsula in recognition of suicide awareness for military members. While they are unable to join us tonight, I want to thank both of them for their service, sacrifice, recognition of the struggles that too many of our military members face. Let's give them a round of applause for walking across the entire UP. And now I ask anyone that's in the military, anyone in law enforcement, any first responder to please stand. And now I'd like to ask for a moment of silence to recognize the deceased members of our military, law enforcement, and first responders that we've lost in the last year and we've lost in the history of our state. Thank you. Thank you. Now I'd like to give special recognition to a group that's been doing good work that has an exciting event coming up that I'm looking forward to participating in. I'd like to recognize the Michigan Legislative Black Caucus as they unveil the portrait of William Webb Ferguson, the first African-American to serve in the Michigan House of Representatives. The unveiling will be here on February 28th, right here at the Capitol. And Representative Ferguson served from 1893 to 1896, and his will be the first portrait of an African-American to hang in the state capitol, long overdue and well-deserved. Thank you very much for that opportunity. Now, let's start with a look back at what we've done over these years, the incredible comeback of Michigan. To begin with, sometimes you're going to hear it from me, but it's good to hear it from a third party. So let me start with the Wall Street Journal and two articles they wrote, and to show the contrast in our state over the last decade. Now, on October 20th, 2009, the Wall Street Journal ran an article entitled, the state of joblessness. And if refer to the second sentence, what does it say? Here's some free budget balancing advice. Steer clear of Michigan model. The Wolverine state is once again set to run out of money, and it's once again poised to raise taxes, even as jobs and businesses disappear. 2009. Now, let's talk about a Wall Street Journal article from September 25th, 2017, entitled "The Michigan Comeback Story." The first paragraph of that article reads, "As Washington begins to debate tax reform in earnest, states can provide instructive policy lessons for better and sometimes worse. See the fiscal crack-ups in Connecticut and Illinois. Michigan, on the other hand, offers a case study in the pro-growth potential of business tax reform. Folks, we're back, and we're only going to keep going up." And let me give you some measures of that success. I'll walk through these fairly quickly, but I think it's important we recognize what we've done. And when I say we, what we have all done as Michiganders. First of all, private sector job creation. We've created over 540,000 private sector jobs. We rank number one in the Great Lakes states, number six in the nation. And to put that number in perspective for you, that's more than the populations of Grand Rapids, Warren, Sterling Heights, Marquette, Traverse City, and Muskegon combined. That's how many jobs we've created. And we as government don't create the jobs, we create the environment for success. So let me mention some of the industrial things happening in these major industries in our state. Manufacturing. We're back there. We're number one in the nation in the creation of manufacturing jobs. Our auto industry is making a huge comeback. They're reconsolidating in Michigan. To give you one statistic that should stick with you, 76% of all the research and development in the U.S. auto industry happens right here in Michigan. We dominate that field, and we're going to keep that leadership. Our agriculture and food industry. We have the second most diverse ag industry in the nation, and we should be proud of that. It's grown to a $100 billion industry. And to pick one illustration to show the kind of growth and potential is the Michigan wine and hard cider industry. I know some of you like that industry. To give you an idea in terms of economic impact, the economic impact of that industry is now $5.4 billion annually, up from $300 million in 2005. Think about that growth. And very importantly, as part of agritourism, we had over 1.7 million visitors to our wineries in the last year. So get out there and check out those grapes. Tourism. Transitioning right into that. We've been setting records over the last several years. It's been extremely exciting. And we have events that are drawing national attention. Two I would highlight, though, is the UP 200 dog sled race in Marquette and the Ice Fest in Munising. These are awesome events. Sue and I both had the opportunity, pleasure, and had a blast at these events last year. I encourage you to go up north and hit it the weekend of February 14th through the 19th to hit these festivals. Check them out. Per capita income growth. This talks about the wealth of all of us in terms of how well we've done, in terms of more earnings and more opportunity to help our families. From 2010 through the first three quarters of 2017, Michigan's per capita personal income grew 28%. To put that in context, that ranks us number one for rate of growth in the Great Lakes states, again, number six in the entire nation. And to put it in perspective, that works out over $10,000 per Michigander in terms of the amount of increase in just 7 years. We have more work to be done, but we're heading back in a positive fashion on that front. And now something near and dear to my heart and to many of your hearts. One of my top priorities was to reunite families that were separated because of a poor economy and poor decisions and had to leave the state of Michigan. Last year, for the first time since the turn of the century, more people came into Michigan than left Michigan. Thank you. We are actually the number one state in the Great Lakes region for net inbound people with bachelor's degrees. You used to hear about Chicago and Illinois, now it's Detroit and Michigan, and we're staying on the gas. And let me share a story with you. This is a great story. This is about a fabulous young woman from California, Kristen Hope. She grew up in California. She went to college in San Francisco. She could have gone to Silicon Valley, stayed in California, and established a career there. But she wanted to do something different with her life, and it led her to Detroit a couple years ago. She's fallen in love with the city and has been part of its resurgence. She's in a new industry called FinTech, the financial technology industry, downtown. And she actually has a 5-year plan for herself and for the future of the city that she wants to be part of. And she's encouraging her friends and her family back in California to come to Michigan. Kristen's here with us tonight. Kristen, would you please stand up and be recognized? Thank you, Kristen. Now on to education. I want to talk about some of the focused initiatives we've done that will truly make a long-term difference to the young people of our state. These don't happen overnight, but making a commitment to these programs, they will make a huge difference to our children's future. And let me begin with a program I'm very proud we did back in 2014 and 2015, the Great Start Readiness Program for preschool. We made the largest new investment in preschool in the entire nation. We more than doubled the amount of openings we have for economically disadvantaged kids from 28,000 to 64,000. We are going to give these kids a brighter future. Related to that, the next step up the tier, we did some great legislation in 2016 on pre-3 reading. It's not just about third grade reading, it's about pre-3 reading. You learn to read through third grade. To be a successful learner after that, you have to have that ability to read. We did legislation. We're putting resources behind it to do great work to help these kids make sure we have everyone in Michigan reading well by third grade. Going to the other end of the spectrum, early middle college. In 2011, we had 12 early middle college programs in our state. 12. In 2017, we have 136. We've tripled the number of college classes completed in high school from 23,000 back in 2010 to over 85,000 in 2016. Why is this important? This gives our high schoolers exciting challenges to work on, to challenge them, to give them new things to think about, to give them a head start on college. Many of these young people have an opportunity to complete an entire year of college credits before they leave high school. Not only does that give a head start on college, that saves a whole year of college costs. That's the best way we can help have affordable education for people, is give them an opportunity to learn in high school and not wait. Let them flourish. A top priority I've had for years is career tech education. I've made it one of my missions to say we need to end the discrimination towards people who have made a career in the skilled trades. These are good jobs held by good people who live in good communities throughout Michigan. Your work makes the American economy work. We respect you and we applaud every professional trade and skilled trade person out there. And we need to do more to support them and get more young people interested in having these great, outstanding careers. And we've taken steps to make that happen. Thank you. Thank you. In 2015, we made $50 million in grants to our community colleges for capital equipment. I personally visited many of these colleges. These community colleges did fabulous work. They did partnerships with employers on new equipment, and they made a process so you could get trained on this equipment and walk right into a well-paying job. That's the way the system should work. This last year, we did the Career Pathways Alliance, which is about a public-private partnership to bring education together with private industry to say, we can do more. We now have over 120 alliance members, including employers and educational institutions. I want to give a big shout out to the leadership of that alliance, and that's our state superintendent, Brian Whiston, and our TED director, Roger Curtis. As part of this process, we've done some great legislation. We've done important policy changes, including the creation of a career exploration course, teacher development, and an opportunity for teachers to get in with private employers and get credit for those experiences. That's just the first stage. We have more coming. But that was with great legislative support, and I want to give a shout out to several representatives. I want to thank Representative Colley, Aller, Rendon, and Alexander. Stand up, the four of you, and let's give you a shout out for your good work. Now, one of my favorite programs, you've heard this before, is FIRST Robotics. This is an after-school program that takes place from elementary school through high school, but in particular, the high school programs, FIRST Robotics, is we have over 500 high school teams. To give you a point of reference, we have more teams than California and New York combined. We are the leader in this field, and you can see what this can do when I talk about this next story. I want to tell you the story about Jeremiah Nelson. Jeremiah is only a couple years old. He has the most serious form of spina bifida, and he can't crawl or walk. But he had an early on mentor that went out and found two robotics teams, two FIRST teams, the Petoskey Palatins and the Central Lake Trobotics. What did they do? They customized a car for Jeremiah so he can get around and interact with other kids. Now, there's no manual to do this. This is unique work. They just said, we're going to do this. And they build him a cool robotics car. And it's changing lives. It's changing their lives for doing this kind of work to help Jeremiah. It's changing Jeremiah's life. And it's showing all what we can do, what these young people can do, when we just provide the form and the elements for their success. And it's great. Tonight we have a special guest. Let's open those doors and let's welcome in Jeremiah, his mom Danielle, his dad Stacy, his brother Samuel. For Jeremiah. And my family will tell me when we're done, Jeremiah is probably a better driver than I am today. I'd also like to recognize some people on the balcony, though, that helped make that happen. Not only did we have Jeremiah's family with us, we had Jason Chrome from Bear River Electrics, the mentor for the team, and Paige Smith and Matt Carey, two team members. So if you could stand and we could recognize you. Now, moving on to infrastructure. In our nation, we've consistently underinvested in our infrastructure. Why? Because it's not an exciting topic, and much of it's hidden from view. In Michigan, we've taken action to do better, because infrastructure is critical to the quality of our life and our economic well-being. In 2015, we passed legislation providing for $1.2 billion more for roads and bridges, while also providing $200 million in lower and middle income tax relief with the homestead property tax credit. Not only will we keep this pledge to accelerate the spending, but I'm going to ask for additional budget dollars to go even faster in this next year's budget. We can do even better than what we've already committed. Let's improve our infrastructure with roads and bridges and make an investment to get rid of those potholes. Thank you. But it's just not about spending money. It's doing things smarter, and I want to share a couple of illustrations. We have an integrated asset management pilot going on for infrastructure between the Grand Rapids and Detroit regions, and it's shown great partnership. And I want to thank both communities for showing two sides of the state can do wonderful things when we put you together. Other things, though, to share in terms of smart corridors. If you've ever been on US 23, you knew what a mess that was. 3 hours southbound in the morning, that's jammed up, 3 hours in the evening going northbound. We did an analysis to say, how do you solve this 3 hour each way problem, a 6 hour a day problem? Well, the normal answer was a 24-hour solution. Let's build another lane each way. Well, what does that cost? It costs $400 million to do a 24-hour solution, the standard solution you'd think of. We put on our thinking caps. I need to thank MDOT and a lot of smart people, including the Federal Highway people. They came up to say, let's use the shoulder. Let's make it a smart highway. Let's make it a flex route that not only will be helpful now, but we can use it in the future with autonomous and connected vehicles. That cost $90 million. We saved over $300 million to solve a problem instead of just following the same old model. Another one is, thank you. Right now we have a public-private partnership opportunity out for I-75. We're talking about, we've been working on that project for several years, the projection it was going to take decades to get it done. By doing this P3 bid, we believe we can reduce that time frame by an entire decade. Just think what a decade without construction work going on I-75 would mean to our entire economy, let alone the people living along that corridor. That's the kind of work we're doing. And then a personal favorite. You've been hearing about this one for a long time in terms of my state of the state, the Gordie Howe International Bridge. We have a wonderful working partnership with Canada. We need to say thank you for Canada for the financing. They've been awesome partners. But 2018 is going to be a big year. The contract with the builder will be signed, and the groundbreaking will occur. I'm looking forward to joining with our Canadian partners this summer in starting construction right here in Detroit on the Gordie Howe International Bridge. Thank you. And we have a very special guest here tonight that I want to recognize from Canada. It's great we have the Consul General, who does a fabulous job, but we have a high-level minister from Canada, essentially equivalent to one of our cabinet secretaries. So it is a special treat, and our primary partner on the bridge project. So I'd ask him to stand, but ask we all give a great shout-out and thank you to the Honorable Amarjeet Soi, the Minister of Infrastructure and Communities for the Government of Canada. Minister Sohi. We had a great meeting earlier. We're comparing steel toe boot sizes and hard hats so we can be all set for the summer. Our communities, let me talk about that and the impact there. In the last few years, we've made a tremendous improvement there. And the thing in our communities that means most to most individuals are their homes. The greatest asset people have that's not a family member or a relative in some fashion. How have we done in home prices in Michigan over the last few years? The average Michigan home sells for 73% more than in 2010. That's an increase of almost $78,000 in the average home of Michigan. That's a great step forward in showing that we are coming back and we're on the right path to support our families in terms of home ownership. Our communities are doing well, though, particularly our big cities. I want to mention two in particular. Detroit's transformation has been incredible. Remember what Detroit was like 10 years ago, or you may not want to. The progress has been incredible, and it's been about all of us working together. If you look just this last year, the Little Caesars Arena opened. The skyline's going to be transformed. The tallest building between Chicago and New York is going to be going up on the former Hudson site. That's tremendously exciting. And I want to give a shout out to our legislators, Senator Horn and Stamos, for their work on the Thrive and Good Jobs package. Thank you for your work in making that happen. But the neighborhoods also have exciting things. One neighborhood project in particular is in the Fitzgerald neighborhood. They have a great program called the Fitz Forward Program. It's about holistic neighborhood development with over 300 revitalized parcels, a new public park, greenways, a food ecosystem, green infrastructure, and local work development opportunities. That's what we need to be doing in the neighborhoods of Detroit to go along with exciting things in the downtown. Now let me speak about Flint. And I want to thank Pastor Hawkins for his invitation tonight. Thank you, Pastor. In Flint, we continue to see good water results, and we're continuing the replacement of lead service lines. The city recently completed its third six-month period with great water test results at 6 parts per billion. That's comparable to most other Michigan cities, so the water has improved dramatically. But we're continuing to work hard in terms of educational efforts and health efforts to help young people and all people in Flint in particular. And we need to do more statewide. We're going to continue to work on having the right lead and copper rule that can be a role model for the rest of our country. But I'd also like to highlight in Flint some great economic development achievements going on and how we're all partnering together in teamwork to bring jobs to Flint. And I want to thank some great companies. Lear has brought over 400 new jobs to Flint recently. General Motors just announced a new engine coming to be built in Flint. A fabulous project, if you haven't been there yet, is the Ferris Wheel Building. It's about entrepreneurship and innovation, and it won a top award as one of the 6 most impactful economic development projects in the entire country. So we're seeing progress there. We talk about our big cities a lot, but we have some awesome smaller communities, and I want to give them a shout out too. We create a program called Rising Tide, 10 communities in the 10 regions, to help them get on their feet, to do exciting things, to help them help themselves, and it's working. We've had 2 recent graduates, Charlotte and River Rouge, are doing incredible things. Through this program, we're seeing revitalized downtowns, including renovations and rehabs, new businesses, positive attitude and culture, exciting things going on. So tonight, I'd ask we recognize 3 mayors. We have the honor of having Mayor Duggan from Detroit, Mayor Weaver from Flint, and Mayor Lewis from Charlotte with us. This shows how partnerships can deliver results, and it's not about partisanship. So I'd ask all 3 mayors to rise and be recognized for your good work and partnership. Quality of life. Quality of life extends beyond communities to both wonderful items that can be enjoyed by all, or items of health, welfare, or challenges we face in certain groups. And we've made great progress in many of these areas, but we still face some challenges. First of all, quality of life, pure Michigan funding. We've increased it by 36% over the last few years. One example of success, though, is in the last 3 years alone, non-resident daily passes at our state parks in the UP have increased 58%. It's becoming a destination around the world because of that investment we made. To go with it, though, it's about the Iron Bell Trail I'd share with you. It's something I announced a few speeches ago. In 2012, we started it. It's going to be the largest statewide trail in the entire nation. To give you an idea where we're at is we have over 1,300 miles already finished. The goal will be 2,000 miles of trails for hiking and biking in Michigan. We're going to show the rest of the world that if you want to have great recreational opportunities, in addition to having the best lakes in the world, we're going to have the best trails that go with them. Arts and culture. Well. An often overlooked item, arts and culture, though. We've invested in that. We've increased our funding for arts and culture nearly 5-fold since 2010. We have world-class assets, the DIA, the DSO, and this summer in northern Michigan, we're going to have the opening of the Great Lakes Center for Performing Arts. So we're looking to bring arts and culture to all corners of Michigan. Healthy Michigan. Healthy Michigan is a program that I'm very proud of because it's saving lives. We have 675,000 Michiganders in Healthy Michigan. They're getting life-saving treatment, 80% are getting annual physicals, and they're avoiding ER visits. This is the right way to help people. Let's prevent those major illnesses. Let's give them an opportunity to hold a job. And it's making a difference in lives and well-being throughout our state. We should be proud. Let's keep it up. On the other hand, we have a crisis. an opioid crisis in our state. It's developed over the past decade involving the abuse of these drugs. We've seen dramatic increases in addiction and overdose deaths in the last several years. As a state, we've been very active in addressing this terrible situation, but much more remains to be done. I want to start by giving a shout out to leadership on this front. Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly has been a leader on the task force, and he recently signed some legislation that will make a difference. To that and our legislative partners, I say thank you to the Lieutenant Governor and our legislators for making this happen. Thank you. A great program going on this topic. It's called the Angel Program, and it was started by two individuals who are not here tonight, but I do want to recognize them. Lieutenant Rob LaMarche of the Escanaba Department of Public Safety and Delta County Prosecutor Phil Strom. What is this program? It's been a success there, and it's all about really saying you can walk into a police facility, a Michigan State Police Post, and say you need help, that you have an addiction. And the goal isn't to arrest you, but to get you counseling, to get someone to make your life get back on track. And that's where the angel comes in. When you walk into one of these places, you will be assigned an angel. And that angel will help you get your life back together, hopefully. And it did so well up in Escanaba and that part of the state. I want to thank the Michigan State Police for doing it statewide. We've rolled it out across all of Michigan, and I can tell you we've saved lives already. A second terrible problem is campus sexual assault. And I want to recognize the First Lady, Sue, and a wonderful group, bipartisan group of legislators for their national leadership regarding prevention on this topic. Since 2015, we've made $1.6 million on grant fundings to college campuses. And what are these grants doing? They're helping educate men and women on how to prevent assaults, how to provide support when it does happen, and how to help survivors with the healing process. We need to keep that up. But I'd also add a special note tonight. Let us also apply a similar commitment in the Nassar case and reach out and support the courageous survivors, ensure that cases like this never happen again. Now let me share another success area though, and this is an area of success you would not normally expect to hear from, but they're doing wonderful work and we should be proud of them, and they don't get enough accolades, and I hope you really stand up and give them a big cheer tonight, and that's the Michigan Department of Corrections. They're transforming how our prisons are working in terms of making us all safer and giving opportunity to the returning citizens that are part of that process. In March 2007, there were 51,554 people in our prisons. That was the all-time high. In September 2017, the population fell below 40,000 for the first time since 1993. And how do you do things like this? One of the most positive national initiatives in corrections is right here in Michigan. It's called the Vocational Village. It began in Ionia in 2016, it expanded to Jackson. We have further plans to expand. It provides our returning citizens the opportunity to give skills for a great career. It's a win for all of us. The Vocational Village needs employer partners. So I'm encouraging any private employer or any employer out there to join this program. I want to recognize the Grand Rapids area in particular in West Michigan. They have over 20 local employers that have partnered with the Vocational Village already and are helping ex-offenders directly from prison. And I want to share with you a story. One graduate is Salvador Gutierrez. He was in prison for drug crimes. He enrolled in the Vocational Village in Ionia and completed all four tiers of a computerized machining course. He earned four nationally recognized certificates. When he finished the program, he just didn't stop. He became a tutor and mentor for new students. He's out now. He's successfully employed at Transmatic in Holland and doing great. And Salvador is with us tonight. Salvador, please stand up and let us recognize you on your success. A couple other groups I want to recognize and good things we've done. Our seniors, the Silver Key Coalition, the partners I've had. Every year we've been delivering almost 500,000 meals more to the homes of seniors than we did in 2011. And then our veterans. We needed to do more. We were behind. We were actually ranked 53rd out of 50 at one point when I first became governor in some veteran metrics. That's embarrassing, and that's wrong. If you look at our veterans today in terms of benefits they're receiving, we worked with them to increase the level of benefits received by all veterans, and on average, they're 40% higher than they were when we took office. In addition to that, we've created veteran-friendly employer programs to help them get jobs. And we have a success story here tonight I'd like to recognize. Kyle Jastrin was hired through the Roush Veterans Initiative Program. He started as a program manager. He's been there for more than 3 years. He's gotten promoted. He's a general manager now. He's hiring other veterans into Roush. He's working on his MBA at the U of M, so he can one day hopefully be on an executive team at Roush. We're proud to have Roush as a gold-level, veteran-friendly employer, and it's one of 150 Michigan employers that are in this program, and I encourage more to join. But we have Kyle with us tonight. Kyle, please stand up and be recognized. The last time on the look back is finally we did all the above in a fiscally responsible fashion. We completed structurally sound balanced budgets, and very importantly, we addressed long-term debt issues that had gone on for years without proper attention. I want to thank the great work going on for retirement reforms in 2012 and 2017. We reduced our long-term debt, our unfunded liabilities, by over $20 billion. And we put a payment plan in place to say we can move forward to make sure these retirees get their benefits they deserve and at the same time not leave future generations in debt because of past decisions. That's the kind of effort we're doing, and we should be proud of that. Not only while we were doing this, we've increased our rainy day fund from when I started office of $2 million to almost $900 million today. That's fiscal responsibility, folks. Now, we're not going to rest on the laurels of the past. Let me talk about what we need to do in the next year and beyond. I've got six items to talk about: mobility, talent, education, infrastructure, fiscal responsibility, and civility. Mobility. We are the world's leader in mobility. And what is that? That's the convergence of the auto industry and the IT industry, the electrification of vehicles, all these exciting things you hear about. They will transform the world. And to be blunt, you'll hear about Silicon Valley, you'll hear about other places. The world's leader is Michigan. And we're going to keep up that role, and we're going to stay on the gas. And why do we care? It will transform the world in the sense that it's going to save lives. Most accidents are caused by human error. It's going to create opportunity for people that are seniors, for people with disabilities, for people with economic issues. They will be able to travel and do things they were never able to before. It's about efficiency, using our infrastructure smarter and better. Instead of spending more, let's use what we got in a smarter, wiser fashion. Now, these are all wonderful things, but there are challenges. We will see job categories disappear with these changes. And we need to be thinking about how we help people in those categories prepare for that next career proactively. We are going to lead, though, and we've done many great activities. We did M-City at the University of Michigan. We have the Council of Future Mobility. We have the Planet M Initiative. We had the best legislative package in the country passed in 2016, and I want to give a shout-out to Senator Mike Kowal for his great work on that package. We have more activities coming, though. We've got the grand opening of the American Center of Mobility coming, and we've got one of the largest meetings on this topic coming in June to Detroit. It's going to be exciting. And come see this stuff. Join us. Now, to go with that, though, the number one priority, I believe, is talent. We can do more to get people career-connected to wonderful careers, and we can do it faster and better than we historically have because of changes in how the world's going to operate. In February, I'm going to roll out the Marshall Plan for Talent. This is going to lay the groundwork for a new way of producing talent in Michigan. It will lead the world in this thought process. It's going to prepare Michigan students to invent the future, to be ready for what comes next, and break down the walls that have traditionally existed between educational institutions and businesses. This is about public-private partnership working together. We learned some things from the Amazon headquarters proposal that we can do better. We already spotted that, we were working it then, and we're going to keep working hard, tying back into the Career Pathways Initiative. Tonight is a call for all schools, businesses, universities, communities, everyone out there involved in this to say we can do things better, differently, and in teamwork. And we need to step up and do that. So I ask you to look forward to this announcement. It can make a dramatic difference in not hundreds of Michiganders or thousands, but tens of thousands of Michiganders' lives in getting them faster and better to well-paying jobs with less school debt, more efficient and effective. And let's ramp up this program. Let's get it done and show the world we're leading this path. In education, though, we've made huge investments in education. To give you an idea of reference point, in fiscal year 18, K-12 appropriations reached a record. They're $1.6 billion higher per year than they were in 2011. But that's not just enough. We've helped address the retirement reforms, pension liabilities, all those topics. Now we have more money to invest in school operations. So in light of that, when I do the budget coming up in the next 2 or 3 weeks, I'm going to be proposing the largest increase in the basic per pupil student foundation allowance in the last 15 years. Let's invest more in education and the operations of our schools. The Career Pathways Alliance, I already spoke about, but there's more work to be done, and I encourage the legislators to pass the other parts of the package. They'll make a difference. Also, I believe we need an A to F grading system for our schools, and I ask our legislators to partner with me on that. Now, a fun one. In April 25th to 28th, we're going to have the World Championships for FIRST Robotics right here in Michigan, and I encourage you all to go. It will be rocking. It's a rock concert for nerds, so I'm looking forward to that one. Back to infrastructure again. We need to do more in the future. We've done a lot, but we can't stop, particularly our environment. So on Monday through Friday of next week, each and every day, I'm going to roll out a new major initiative on the environment or infrastructure. And to give you the list of what those topics are, I'm not going to spend a lot of time tonight, but I want you to know we're putting markers out there to say we need to invest more. So I'll go through this list of five. First of all, rural broadband. We need broadband access in every corner of Michigan. It's critically important to bring back our smaller communities. It's about economic engines of these communities and great places to live. We need to do something about the Clean Michigan Initiative. It was a bond issue in 98. It passed by 63% of the public voting for it. It was $675 million. We spent all that money, and we still owe 10 years plus on the bonds. We can come up with a better initiative to keep going and do it in a way where hopefully we don't leave our kids in debt after we've spent the money. Third, recycling. This has probably been one of the most disappointing initiatives I've had in my time as governor. We got complacent. We thought we did the deposit law, so we were doing great on recycling. We're behind. We're half the national average on recycling. We have to do more. It's for our own good, and it's for the well-being of our society and our world. Invasive species, the Asian carp. I'm going to have a day calling on how do we prevent that? And we've been working a partnership agreement with the Great Lakes states and the provinces on how we can come together to make an investment in Illinois at Brandon Road Lock to help keep those carp out. We've had too many studies. We've had too much talk. We have not had enough action. Enough is enough. If the federal government isn't going to do it, or they're not going to do it, let's get together as Michiganders and invest where we need to protect the Great Lakes. Thank you. I have a water infrastructure initiative to talk about our aging infrastructure there. We need to do more. We have too many cases where we've had major breaks in Metro Detroit. We've got pollution showing up in our lakes and rivers coming out of sewer systems. More needs to be done. So each of these details will come out on each day next week, so stay tuned. Another topic, though, I do want to share is PFAS. And PFAS is a series of chemical compounds. Many of you have heard it. Many of you may not have. It's an emerging contaminant that's creating a lot of issues, but it was with us for years. It was non-stick cooking surfaces, it was firefighting foam, It was used in many different places. But we need to do something now to step up and understand it has negative impacts on our health. So in Michigan, we're taking leadership on that. We're partnering with the federal government, with local authorities to hold those accountable that help create the contamination. We're establishing standards in our state. We're leading the nation on that. We're going to continue moving forward, and we need to do more on this topic. And this will not be the only contaminant we're going to face in our world. So let's be proactive. Let's not be reactive. Let's not create panic, but do it in a thoughtful fashion where we go out and solve the problem. So I encourage you to continue to watch and work with us and speak up on how we can be a leader in this nation on dealing with problems like PFAS. Now, let me talk about fiscally responsible government for a minute. I mentioned it already, but being fiscally responsible is more than just balancing budgets. It's not just thinking about us today, but how our children and our future generations. We need to think of how we act in our own families. Think of this. In our families, we don't go out and spend money on ourselves as parents to buy something nice for ourselves or to go spend money on something and go home and hand the bill to our kids. That's just flat out wrong, isn't it? Well, we have a broken culture in our political world where it's okay to say we can spend money or we can cut taxes and do that now for short-term benefit and leave the bill for the kids that are beyond. I don't think that's right either. If we're going to do something, let's make sure we're paying for it. Because one of the things we don't think up often enough in this political world is not just the consequences on us today, but shouldn't we always be asking the question, how do we make it so future generations are better off, not worse off, because of debt we burden them with? And let's approach government that way. We inherited one of those, and that was those unfunded liabilities I mentioned to you about. That had gone on for decades. We inherited $65 billion. We did reforms to deal with $20 billion. We put a payment plan in place, so by 2038, it'll be paid off. Literally, it'll free up billions of dollars then to support programs for those kids of the future. Shouldn't we stay on payment plans like that, and shouldn't we make sure that we're adding to future generations rather than taking away from them? Now, the last topic I want to talk about on this group was civility. And I admit, I'm getting on my soapbox here. I believe the greatest threat to the future of our nation is ourselves. And the current environment of people fighting with one another, whether it be partisanship, whether it's ideology or other issues. If we can't get along with ourselves, how can you be great? How can you maintain that status? We need to start acting like a family more. We need to be using that as our role model. One of the warning signals I'll tell you, if you hear someone running for office, and this is my personal view, and they talk about fighting, the red light should be flashing. Who are we fighting with? Ourselves. That's not right. Fighting does have a role. It's on the beaches of Normandy, not the beaches of Lake Michigan. We need... We have proven in Michigan by relentless positive action, by working together, by not working about these issues, we have solved problems and we have exceeded the rate of economic growth, improvements in quality of life, so many different fields in the state, because we haven't just fallen in the same old trap Washington has and too many other places in our country has. Let's stand up and be proud. We may be alone for a long time on this one, but isn't the right answer? Aren't we one giant family? Let me start wrapping up, and I want to thank all of you. I want to thank the people of Michigan for this opportunity. All the groups, the organizations that partnered with me in doing so many initiatives. The legislators, thank you so much for your partnership and your friendship. It means a lot to me. I want to thank my team, the 47,000 people in state government, and the cabinet members, and all of us that have been partners in so many different ways, doing so many different things, and in particular, I want to thank my family for putting up with me. Let me share a story, though, and some thoughts. In January 2009, Sue and I went out to dinner for our Friday night date at our favorite restaurant. You can imagine how exciting a date I am as a nerd. I got on a roll and started talking about what a mess our state was in. Remember, January 2009. The discussion then turned to careers and the future for our children, and about how they might be forced to leave Michigan because they may not have an opportunity. I expressed how dramatically I thought our government needed to change in our state. It wasn't about fixing Michigan, it was about reinventing Michigan. You've heard me say that many times. Fixing was not good enough. We needed to reinvent things. So to her credit, she called me out. She said, we should talk about you running for governor. We talked about a 10-year plan, 2 years running and 8 years as governor. I was fortunate enough to have the honor of getting elected, with reinvention being the goal. During this period, we've had huge ups and downs. It hasn't been a straight line. But overall, there's no question that Michigan is a far better state today than 2010. Most of our kids staying now, but many are returning, and kids with no prior connection like Kristen are coming to Michigan. On a personal note, though, and I am taking some editorial license, I'm proud to report that our kids are doing well here. Jeff's getting married to Blair, a wonderful young woman, and it will be a union of a Wolverine and a Spartan. Melissa has bought a starter home, has a great boyfriend, and just got a cute dog. Our extra child, our non-biological child, Zach, has a great position with a Michigan company that's a world leader in cybersecurity. And Kelsey is a senior in college. Last semester, Kelsey, time to look for that job. Now, I'd ask you to just take a moment, though, and I encourage each of you to take a moment to think about young people in your life that are now enjoying the opportunity to have an exciting life in Michigan. Just stop and pause for a moment and think about those young people you know. They have an opportunity now that might not have before. Thank you. Now, I'd like to end with a couple other comments. Tonight just isn't about looking back, but looking ahead. Let me give you my commitment to work hard through the last day of my term. It's an honor and privilege to serve you. Tonight, I'm also going to take the privilege of sharing some advice for the future. Succeeding generations of leadership and citizens need to stay the course and continue the work we've started. Each and every succeeding year can be better for decades to come if we continue the path we've created through the partnerships we've made over the last few years. It will require certain things, though. It will require us to solve real problems with real solutions rather than forcing partisan or ideological solutions on one another. It will require us to act with relentless positive action and not spend time assigning blame or worrying about credit. It will require our leaders to act more like a family than politicians. Let's make our positive progress of the last few years continue for the next few decades. Thank you. God bless Michigan and the United States of America. Thank you.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.